And Aleph Amar Aleph, we're up to the top line of the Gemara. So the Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda Omer B'Yisrael Chodesh Echad. Hainu Tanakama. So if you remember, we mentioned yesterday in the Mishnah that according to Rabbi Yehuda, he made this distinction between a Yisrael versus a Kohen who makes these all these different kinds of Nidarim that we were talking about. And Rabbi Yehuda gave a little bit more leeway to a Kohen because if once the Kohen divorces his wife, he can no longer stay married to her. But if it's a regular person who's not a Kohen, he only has 1 month. The question is, that's the same opinion as the Tanakama. The Tanakama also says that you have 30 days. So what's the difference? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye Kahenes Asalash Minan, Rava Amar Chodesh Malev Chodesh Chaser Ikabinai. According to Abaye, there really is no difference vis-a-vis the Yisrael. The difference is only regarding the Kohen. The case of the Kohen is the Chiddush that Rabbi Yehuda puts forth, namely that if the Kohen makes the Neder, we give him a leeway of 2 months instead of 1 month. Whereas according to Rava, the Nafkamina between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is about whether it's a full 30 days or could it, or theoretically 29 days, because Rabbi Yehuda uses the terminology of Chodesh Echa. Now in Halacha, a month could sometimes be 29 days. In other words, as we know, you know, many months in the Jewish calendar are only 29 days. So in theory, you could have this period of leeway being only 29 days, whereas according to the Tanakama, it has to always be 30 days. Okay. The Gemara says, Amar Rav, Lo shanu ela b'mefarish aval b'stam yotzi la'alter v'itin k'suva, u'shmuel amar afilu b'stam lo yotzi shema yimtza pesach l'nidro. Comes the Gemara and has a further machlokes. When the Mishnah said that the husband makes a neder, that we give him certain leeway up to a month or 2 months, depending if he's a Kohen, right? We give him certain leeway before, you know, forcing him to dissolve the marriage or divorce his wife. So Rav says that's only true if he actually specified a time frame. So if he said, you know, to his wife, you can't eat this fruit or you can't wear this jewelry for a month, for 2 months, for whatever it is, so that's okay. Then we give him that period of time. But if the guy just made the nether without specifying, he just said, you can't eat this fruit, you can't wear this jewelry, whatever. So according to Rav, he has to divorce her right away and pay up her ksuba. But according to Shmuel says, no, even if the guy doesn't specify, there's a chance that maybe he'll find a Pesach for his nether, which we spoke a lot about yesterday, right? That maybe he'll be able to find, you know, some sort of extenuating circumstance to undo the nether. So according to Shmuel, even that, even if he doesn't, you know, specify a time frame, that's not grounds for immediate divorce. So asks the Gemara, v'ha'iflugu be'chad azimna, disnan, ha'madiris ishto mitashmish hamita, be'shamay omrim shtei shabasos, uve'silo omrim shabas achas, v'amar rav machlokas b'mefarish aval b'stam yotzi la'alter v'itin k'suva, u'shmuel amar afilu b'stam nami lo yotzi. So the Gemara asks, why are we quoting this machlokas again? This machlokas between Rav and Shmuel about whether this idea that we give the husband leeway, we give him time to annul the neder before we force him to divorce his wife. In other words, that machlokas, whether that's only true if he specified or not. Why are we quoting this machlokas again if we already referenced that machlokas back on Daf Samach Aleph? The Mishnah. Oh, sorry. The Mishnah Daf Samach Aleph mentioned a machlokas if a man takes a neder to not engage in relations with his wife. So we quoted a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as to how long he has before he needs to annul the neder, whether it's 1 week or 2 weeks. And we pointed out in the Gemara earlier on Daf Samach Aleph this very machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Namely, Rav says that which the Mishnah and Samach Aleph has a machlokas about whether the guy has a week or two to annul that neder, that's if he actually specified a time frame. Whereas according to Shmuel, even if he didn't specify a time frame, we don't force him to get divorced immediately. Because again, maybe he'll find an opening to undo the nether. So why are we quoting this machlokas again here if we already quoted it back on Daf Samach Aleph? So the Gemara says, no, tzricha. De'i idmar behahi, behahi ka'am arav mishum delo efshar befarnas avo beha de'efshar befarnas ima modele l'shmuel. De'i idmar beha beha ka'am arshum mishum de'efshar befarnas avo behahi ima modele l'rav, tzricha. The Gemara just says that one could have argued that there should be a distinction between these two cases, between the case of the guy who made the nether to not have relations with his wife versus our case of the person who vows to not support his wife. So as we pointed out already yesterday, in the case of a guy who vows to not support his wife, he could theoretically appoint a trustee, a third party, to support his wife on his behalf, whereas by relations, that's obviously not an option. So the Gemara says one could have argued that maybe we should distinguish between the two cases, so kamash malan, that this machlokas applies across the board. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tanan. So the Mishnah told us that if a man makes a neder that his wife should not eat a particular fruit, so then he has to divorce her and pay up her ksuva. So the Gemara says that makes sense according to Rav, because Rav will just say it depends if the guy specified a time frame. But according to Shmuel, that even if the person doesn't specify a time frame, that's still not grounds for immediate divorce, because maybe he'll find an opening and we'll be able to undo the neder. So how does Shmuel explain why the Mishnah says that we force the guy to get divorced right away? So the Gemara says, you're right. Hacha b'may askinan, kigon shenadra hi v'kayim la'ihu, v'kasavar rab meir who knows in etzba bein shineha. Comes the Gemara and says, the case is actually as follows. We misunderstood the case in the Mishnah. According to Shmuel, The case was not where the husband made the nether, but the wife made the nether. She made a nether saying she's not going to eat this fruit or wear this jewelry or whatever. And the husband was the one who affirmed the nether, right? Usually if a husband hears a nether that his wife made and he doesn't like the nether, he has the ability to annul the nether that day. But if he doesn't do that, he could actually affirm the nether also. That's also an option. So the case is a little bit different here. The wife made the nether. So obviously there's no possibility of finding a Pesach, finding an extenuating circumstance. She's the one who made the nether herself. The husband was the one who affirmed it. And now the Gemara points out that this reflects the opinion of Reb Meir, and Reb Meir holds that it's that in this case we consider it to be the husband's fault. The Gemara coins this expression, he places his finger between her teeth. In other words, even though the wife is the one who made the nether, the husband has the ability to undo it. And the fact that he failed to do that, and in fact he did the opposite of that, he actually affirmed the nether, so that's now going to be on him. That's going to be his problem, and therefore he's going to have to divorce her and actually pay up her ksuba. So asks the Gemara, the Savar Rabbi Meir, who knows Seinetzba Bein Shinah, the Hasanya, Ha'isha Shenadra Ben Nazir, the Shama Baila Velo Heferla, Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Huda Omrim he nasna etzba bein shineha lefichach imratza haba lahafir yafir v'im amar iefshi beisha nadranes teitzei shalov v'chzuba. Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbi Elazar Omrim who nosen etzba bein shineha lefichach imratza haba lahafir yafir v'im amar iefshi beisha nadranes yotzi v'yitin k'suba. The Gemara says, how can you make the argument that Rabbi Meir holds that it's the husband's fault if the wife made the nether and the husband just affirmed it? In other words, he didn't undo the nether. How is that the husband's fault? There's a machlokas and a tosefta meseches nazir about the following case. Let's say a wife made a nether that she's going to become a nazira, or she's going to be a nazir. The husband heard the nether and didn't say anything. He didn't annul the nether. So the question is, whose fault is it that the woman is now a nazira? According to Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, it's her fault. At the end of the day, she's the one who made the nether. So therefore, the husband has two options. Either he can annul the nether if he chooses to do so, or if he doesn't, if the husband can turn around and claim, I don't want to be married to a woman who makes nedarim willy-nilly, who just makes nedarim out of the blue, and that would be legitimate grounds for divorce, and the woman would actually forfeit her ksuba, according to Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, because it's her fault. She's the one who made the nether. She never should have done that. However, according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Elazar, they say no. They say that it's his fault because he should have annulled it. And therefore, if he wants to divorce her, he's going to have to pay her ksuva. But what do you see from this Tosefta and Nazir? You see that according to Rabbi Meir, we're placing the onus, we're placing the blame on the woman, not on the man. That seems to contradict what the Gemara is saying here, that the fact that the husband heard her nether and didn't annul it, that seems to be his fault. So the Gemara says, you're right. Epoch, Reb Meir for Rabbi Huda Omrim. Who knows saying Rabbi Yossi for Rabbi Elazar Omrim Hinas. You have to reverse the Shita. So really, in that Tosefta and Nazir, it was really Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda who were the ones who were placing the blame on the husband, and it was Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Elazar who were placing the blame on the woman. So the Gemara then asks again, the Sava Rabbi Yossi, he nasna v'hasnan, Rabbi Yossi omer ba'anios shelo nasan kitzva. How can you argue that Rabbi Yossi thinks that it's the woman's fault? Didn't we quote in the Mishnah yesterday the opinion of Rabbi Yossi that if there's a nether made that the woman is not allowed to wear jewelry? So he said if the woman is poor, then the only time that nether is a problem is if there's no time frame. In other words, the husband says that the nether is going to be it's going to be eternal. We'll see in the Gemara in a little bit that maybe there is some kind of a time frame, but it's a relatively extended period of time. So then the halacha is that he has to divorce her. Now, according to the way that we're explaining the Mishnah, that really the wife made the nether and the husband is the one who's affirming or failing to annul the nether. If that's the case, so then how can Reb Yossi place the blame on the woman? It's really the man's fault. It's the man's fault that, you know, that he heard the wife's nether and chose not to annul it. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ema Rabbi Meir for Rabbi Yossi Omrim. Who knows saying Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Elazar Omrim Hinasna. So basically, you have to kind of play around with the different opinions in the Gemara. You have to, you know, you have to kind of mix and match the opinions that fit the stated Shita. So Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi are the ones who place the blame on the husband, and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar are the ones who place the blame on the wife. So the Gemara asks again, the Savar Rabbi Yehuda Hinasna, the Hasnan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer.
Does anybody say it's both their faults?
No, it doesn't seem to be that way. It doesn't seem to be that way. It seems that the fault is going to go in one direction because at the end of the day, you have to decide whether the woman is entitled to her ksuva or not if you're going to divorce her. So it can't be both. If it's both of their faults, then you're at a stalemate. So you have to decide one way or another whose fault it is. That's the issue. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Savar Rabbi Yehuda he nasna the hasnan Rabbi Yehuda omer be Yisrael yomechad yikayim." How can you say that Rabbi Yehuda places the blame on the woman? Didn't we quote in the Mishnah yesterday that if let's say for example the husband is a Yisrael, so there's less at stake if he divorces his wife, because he could always theoretically remarry her, so we only give him one day. So again, according to our new interpretation of the Mishnah, that it's really the wife who made the nether, that she's not going to eat a particular fruit, let's say, and now the husband is failing to annul that nether, so the question is, Why are we placing the blame on the woman? It sounds like the blame should be placed on the man. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ema Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Huda v'Rabbi Yossi Omrim Huno saying v'Rabbi Elazar over Hinas. Now the Gemara says, what you have to say is that three out of these four Tanaim that we're quoting are placing the blame on the man, and it's only Rabbi Elazar who places the blame on the woman. So the Gemara says, V'imtim Salomar Zuge Zuge Katane Ema Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Elazar Omrim Hinas Na Rabbi Huda v'Rabbi Yossi Omrim Huno saying v'Hastaba Deloke Rabbi Meir. And the Gemara says, if you don't like the textual breakdown, because usually when you see, you know, you see a machlokas when you involve four tanaim, it doesn't usually make sense to pin three against one. Usually, you want to have two against two. So the Gemara says, then what you have to say is that Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elazar, place the blame on the woman. Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Yossi place the blame on the man, and that actually undermines our previous assumption that the Stam Mishnah, or the Mishnah that we were quoting earlier, is reflecting Rabbi Meir. Right, 99% of the time when you see a Mishnah without attribution, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sanhedrin that a Stam Mishnah usually reflects the opinion of Rabbi Meir. This could be the exception to the rule. It's not true 100% of the time. So this could be this Mishnah. That theoretically could not necessarily be reflecting the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Okay, then the Gemara asks again. The Sava Rabbi Yossi ba'anias shalonas an kitzla alma bal matzi mefer. So again, Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah said that if the woman is poor, and there's a neder made that without a specific time frame that she's not allowed to wear jewelry, so we said that that's grounds for divorce. So the Gemara says, does that mean to say that the husband has the right to even annul such a neder in the first place? Urim minhu elu dvarim shabal mefer dvarim sheish ben inui nefesh im erchatzim lo erchatz im es kashed im lo es kashed amar Reb Yosi ein elu nidre inui nefesh ve'elu he nidre inui nefesh shelo ochel baser ve'shelo es dayayin ve'shelo es kashed bevigdei tzivonin. So there's a machlokas quoted at the end of nedar. Now everyone agrees to the following premise. Everyone agrees that there are certain types of nidarim that a husband certainly has the right to annul. That's what we call nidre inui nefesh. Nidarim that involve affliction. In other words, nidarim that also impact the husband's well-being. In other words, even though the wife herself technically made the nether, everyone agrees that the husband is entitled to annul such nidarim because they affect him as well. The question becomes, well, what falls under that category of inui nefesh? So according to the Tanakhama, if let's say the wife made a nether that she's never going to bathe or that she's not going to put on perfume or wear jewelry, that's obviously going to affect the husband. So according to the Tanakhama, the husband can absolutely annul those types of nedarim. However, Rabbi Yossi says those are not called inui nefesh. What qualifies as inui nefesh are things that the wife says, I'm not going to eat meat, I'm not going to drink wine, or I'm not going to, put on big day tzivonin, these certain colored garments, because if she doesn't wear these kinds of garments, it's considered to be a bizayon. So the implication clearly is that according to Rabbi Yossi, the neder of not wearing regular jewelry does not qualify as inui nefesh, which means that according to Rabbi Yossi, the husband has no right to annul that nether at all. So how could, in other words, again, according to our whole newfangled interpretation of the Mishnah, that the case is where the wife made the nether and the husband failed to annul it, and now we're placing the blame on the husband because he affirmed the nether, the question is, but according to Rabbi Yossi, he had no right to annul that nether in the first place. That nether that the wife made, that she's not going to wear jewelry, according to Rabbi Yossi, does not qualify as a nether of inui nefesh at all. So the Gemara says, you're right. Hacha b'mayaskina b'dvarim shebeino levena. So the Gemara explains that the neder we're talking about here are interpersonal matters. And what specifically are we referring to? So Rashi says that what this is a reference to is if the wife made a neder that she's not going to use some sort of an ointment or a lotion to remove pubic hair. She made that kind of a neder, and that's considered to be an interpersonal type of a neder because it affects their ability to engage in intercourse. So therefore, that neder affects the husband, and therefore even Rabbi Yossi would agree that the husband can actually annul that neder. So the Gemara has to clarify. Hani chalaman da amar dvarim shebeino levena habal meif. So the Gemara says, well, that's all well and good if you subscribe to that opinion in the Gemara that when it comes to these types of interpersonal matters, like the wife making a neder to not remove the pubic hair, that the husband has the right to actually annul. That's the opinion of Rav Huna. However, Rav Ada Bar Ava disputes that notion and says that no, the husband has no right to annul. Why not? So he coins the expression that a fox doesn't die in the dirt of a hole. What does that mean? Basically says that the husband is familiar enough with his wife's body that having pubic hair there is not really considered, a real interposition for intercourse. So he says that therefore the husband has no right to actually annul the neder. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela hacha b'mayaskidad kegon desalinu l'kishuteha b'sashmish amita da'amra ye'aser hanas tashmishcha alai im eskashet ke da'amra rav kahana. The Amar of Kahana, Hanas Tashmishi Alecha, Kofet Umshamashto, Hanas Tashmishcha Allah, Yafer Lefishin Machinul Adam Davar Hasrlo. So the Gemara says like this. The case was as follows. The woman made a neder where she basically said that if I wear jewelry, if I put on perfume, that it's going to be forbidden for me to engage in relations with you. That's the way that she formulates her neder. Now, the question becomes, how specifically did she formulate this? If the woman said that I'm forbidding you to derive benefit from me while engaging in relations, the wife has no right to make such a neder, because the wife has an obligation to provide for her husband's sexual needs, and therefore the wife has no right to make that neder, and the husband can have relations with her without annulling the neder, because the neder never took effect in the first place. However, if the wife formulates the neder as such by saying that the benefit I derive from you should be forbidden upon me, then the husband has to annul it, because the wife is essentially forbidding relations upon herself, and the halacha is that you can't feed you can't feed a person something which they forbid upon themselves. So in that case, the husband would in fact have to annul it. So asks the Gemara, well, isn't there an easy way to circumvent this problem? In other words, just tell the woman, okay, don't adorn yourself, don't put on jewelry, don't put on perfume, and then there won't be a problem. Meaning, she made her whole neder dependent on whether she adorned herself. So, okay, so tell her fine. So don't adorn yourself, and then there won't be an issue. So the Gemara says, no, imkin karula menuvelas. If the woman doesn't put on perfume or jewelry for all this time, she's going to become disgusting. So it's not pleasant to the husband. So the Gemara says, okay, v'siska sheit v'seyaser ilave shamesh tei shabasos ilave silo shabes achas. So, okay, let her put on the perfume or the jewelry, and then let her be forbidden for that limited time frame. As we pointed out in the Mishnah earlier, back on Samach Aleph, that machlokas b'shamay and b'selah, as to how long can that nether, be effective for after the husband, or in this case, the wife, made the nether to not engage in relations, either a week or 2 weeks. So, in other words, let her put on the jewelry or the perfume, and then say that for the next week or two, relations are forbidden, and then if they still can't get over that issue, so then they're obviously going to have to divorce. So the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says that it depends who's making the neder here. If it's the husband who's making the neder, in other words, he's forbidding relations on himself, so then the wife assumes that the husband was just angry at her, and she figures that after a week or two, his anger is gonna subside, and then he'll want to have relations with me. But if it's the wife who's the one who's making the neder to forbid relations, and the husband stays quiet and doesn't try to annul the neder, then the wife is going to figure that the husband hates her, and then she's going to demand a divorce immediately. So the Gemara says it just depends on who's formulating the nether and how the nether was precisely formulated. Okay, then we said Rabbi Yossi Omer ba'anius shalom nasan kitzva v'chama kitzva. So if you remember, we keep on referencing this opinion of Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah that if the woman is poor, so then the halacha is that only if the nether was made without a time frame that she can't wear jewelry, that's going to be a problem. That's grounds for divorce. But anything short of that is okay, because the assumption is that a poor woman doesn't wear the jewelry or perfume that often. Anyway, so the Gemara says, well, how long is this, a lack of a time frame? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Yud Beis Chodesh, Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Eser Shanim, Rav Chista, Amar Ravi Miregel, Shekein Benos Yisrael, Miskashtos Varegel. So there's a three-way machlokas. One opinion in the Gemara is that she has up to a year. So if the husband made a neder, or the wife made a neder, and the husband failed to annul the neder, saying that his wife, who's poor, is not going to wear jewelry or perfume for the next year, so up to a year, that's legitimate. According to Rabba Bar Bar Chana, he has up to 10 years, and according to Rav Chista, You only have until the next Yontif, because Jewish women, typically adorn themselves on Yontif. Okay, and then we said, Uvashiris Laman, Yo Maishna Laman, Yo, why by a wealthy woman do we say that you only have up to 30 days? Amar Abaye, Shekin Isha Chashuva, Nenes Mireach Kishuteho Laman Yom, because a prominent woman is going to derive benefit from her perfume, from her adornment, up to 30 days. So the assumption was that if a woman put on her perfume up to 30 days ago, she would still smell okay. After 30 days, that's no longer going to be the case. Obviously, today, those things probably are different. But the assumption back then was that you had up to 30 days to still smell okay from your last time that you put on perfume. Okay, says the Mishnah. Hamadiras ishto shalotelich levesavia bizman shehu ima ba'ir chodesh echad yikayim shnayim yotzi v'itin ksuva yuvizman shehu ba'ir acheres regel echad yikayim shlosha yotzi v'itin ksuva. Imagine the following. The husband makes a neder that his wife is not allowed to go visit her father. So the question is, so the issue here is, where does the father live? The father lives in the same town that the husband and wife live in, so that neder can only be effective without the couple getting a divorce for up to a month. Once it's already 2 months, so then the wife can demand a divorce, and if the husband refuses, then we're going to make him, you know, pay up the ksuba. If the father lives in a different town, he lives far away, so then he has up to then the neder can basically be effective up to a regal. But by the time you hit three regalim, you can't expect the wife to not visit her father for, you know, for the next three yamim tovim. Then the Mishnah says, "Hamaderest isho shelo teilich levesa avel o levesa mishda yotzivit in ksuba mivnei noel bifaneha v'imhaya toim mishum davar acher rashai." If a person made a neder that his wife is not allowed to go to a party, let's say a wedding, a bar mitzvah, whatever, or to a shiva house, so then that's grounds for divorce, and the wife gets your ksuba because you're locking the door in her face. We'll see in the Gemara in a second what exactly that means. But if the reason why he's making the neder is for some external reason, which again we'll talk about in the Gemara later, then that neder is actually valid. Amar la amenas shetomri lefloni masha amartali. If he says, I'm going to only void this nether if you tell the guy what I said to you, if if I say what you said to me, or if you're going to take out the garbage and you're going to, you know, dump out the dirty water, whatever it is. So those are all grounds for divorce. Again, the Gemara is going to explain all of these a little bit later. Okay, so asks the Gemara, Hagufa Kasha, Omar Regala Chedikayim Hashnaim Yotzi Viting Suva, Ema Seifa Shlosha Yotzi Viting Suva Hashnaim Yikayim. The Mishnah seems to be self-contradictory. Regarding the case of the father who lives in a different town, the Mishnah said that if the neder is only for one regel, that's okay, but for three regalim, that's grounds for divorce. So the question is, well, okay, so what about two regalim? What about if the neder was only going to be valid for the next two yamim tovim? So on the one hand, the ratio of the Mishnah implies that that's grounds for divorce, but the latter part that says three regalim sounds like that it's not. So Amar Abaye Seifa Asan Lechahenes V'Rabbi Yehuda. So according to Abaye, the latter case is talking about an Eishes Kohen. As we keep on pointing out, if in the case of the Kohen, we're going to give him more leeway because once he divorces his wife, he cannot remarry her. So that extra time frame of three regalim is only going to be true for a Kohen. Rabba bar Ula Amar Lokasha kan b'redufa kan b'she'ina redufa. Rabba says the distinction is whether this woman is a type of a girl who's always running back to her father's house. If she's constantly running back to her father's house, then it's a shorter time frame because it's considered more distressing on her if you're not going to let her visit her father. But if she's not that kind of a person, so then you have the longer time frame of three regalim. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk from the end of Shir HaShirim, Az ha'yisi ve'enav kemotze'eis shalom. Then I've been in your eyes like someone who has found peace. Amar Rabbi Yochanan kechala shenimtes shlema beveis chamia uredufa leilechu lahagid shivcha beveis avia. It's like a kala who was found whole and found pleasing in the eyes of her father-in-law, and she's running back to her father's house to tell her father about how, you know, about how great they think that she is. So that's an idea, that's a concept of a woman who's a redufa, who runs back to her father's house. And then Gemara quotes a pasuk from Hosea, V'haya vayomahu ne'um Hashem tikri'i yishiva lo tikri'i li'od ba'ali. Hashem says that I'm gonna call you my wife, and I'm no longer gonna be your master. I'm gonna be your husband and no longer your master. Amar Rabbi Yochanan kechala beveis chamia velo kechala beveis avia. It's like a in her father-in-law's house. In the father-in-law's house, the kala gets pampered, or the girl gets pampered. When she's at her father's house, she doesn't get pampered as much, right? That's the assumption. Okay. Then we said, Hamadir is ishto, bishlam levesa mishta.
Yeah. I have a question.
Sure.
How does it practically work? Let's say the husband makes an act that the wife can't wear a tulle or something.
Yep.
So what does she do? She goes to Bestin, the petition Bestin that...
First of all, you have to account for all of the reinterpretations of the Mishnah that we've been providing on this daf, which is that really we're talking about a case where the wife is the one who made the neder and the husband is failing to affirm it. If that's the case, then there is no going to Beis Din and finding a Pesach for your neder. It's the husband's job to either annul or affirm. The wife can't find, in other words, this whole idea of finding a Pesach for your neder, of undoing the neder, that's presupposing that it's the wife who made the neder that the husband made the neder and now he wants to undo that. If the wife made the neder, so then that option is going to fall apart. If you have a case where the husband made the neder, that which was the original assumption of our daf at the very beginning, so then in theory you can go to a Beis Din, maybe you can find a Pesach for the neder, maybe you could say, I didn't realize, you know, X, Y, and Z at the time of the neder, so there are theoretically ways to get around it, again, but you have to iron all the details out, because that's the whole point of today's daf, is trying to figure out all these details about who's making the neder, who's affirming, who's annulling. That's going to be a critical factor in figuring out, you know, if and how this neder is going to be effective. Okay, so the Gemara says, Bishlam Levesa HaMishnah If remember, we said in the Mishnah that if the husband made a neder that the wife can't go to a party or to a shiva house, so then that's grounds for divorce. So the Gemara says, I understand when it comes to a party, to a wedding, because she wants to rejoice, she wants to be part of the simcha. But what's wrong with her not going to a shiva house? What's being closed in her face by not going to a shiva house? So the Gemara says, Tana lemacher himesa veinkoberia softa veika daamri inkoberia sofna. The Gemara says that actually there could be long term ramifications of a woman not going to pay a shiva call, not going to a shiva house, which is that in the future she wants people to eulogize her, or she wants people to care about her, to bury her eventually, so then she has to go also. In other words, if she wants to be reciprocated on the back end after she dies, she has to put in the effort now. So actually, it is, you know, quote-unquote, closing the door in her face, because in theory, it could preclude the possibility of her, you know, being eulogized or buried down the line. Okay.